My computer does this annoying thing when I get a phone call. It will ring on the computer.
Oh.
I can't handle that. There's probably a way to turn that off. Hey, Paula, how's it going?
Hey, Ben, it's going all right. So if you remember,
I
last week you
don't
said that you would have a surprise for me
Oh,
for this.
let's just tease that until the end of the show.
Okay, wow. Huh. Okay. So at the end of today's show, there will be a surprise?
I guess so.
Okay,
Yeah.
am I gonna be happy about it?
Well,
Is it a good surprise?
I would hope so. It's not a bad
Okay,
surprise.
good. Okay,
Well, it might be,
good.
depending on, things.
Oh no.
But
So, yeah, go ahead.
my building does this thing where if you get a package, they instead of like UPS or FedEx or whoever leaving it at the mailboxes, they take it to the office and the office signs for it.
Yeah.
And then the office will put a little note on your mailbox saying, "You have a package. Bring this note to the office and we'll give you your package." Or if like you work during the office hours, you can sign the note and the office will deliver your package inside your apartment, which I think is pretty handy. I mean,
Oh,
I
yeah,
trust the
I guess
leasing
so.
office to not steal my stuff, you know? The
Yeah,
pro
it'd be bad for business if they did
the
that.
problem the problem is, what the heck? Oh. The problem is,
What just happened?
sorry, I just accidentally started my iTunes playing.
Ah, okay.
The problem is they're not the fastest on getting these notes onto the mailbox. So I know that I have a package in the leasing office because I got an email saying, "We delivered your package."
Yes.
But I want to go down there and just be like, "Where my package, yo?" But it's probably going to be
Yeah.
not until like next week when I get a, because today is Thursday. It's probably not going to be until next week and before I get a notice on my mailbox.
Yeah, you
Which
might
is
as well go
frustrating.
down there.
Yeah.
I mean, they save them the trouble of putting it up. Yeah, maybe.
A box of baseball
But
cards. I still collect baseball cards.
you still collect them. See, that I didn't know.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking about which, I don't think I've ever been to your new place.
No, because I moved here after you moved away.
Yeah, that's crazy. But, obviously a thing. I figured out I've been gone almost 4 years.
It's been 3.5 years now. You moved
Yeah.
in October?
I guess so, yeah. It
October
seems
2014.
longer. I think it's because so much stuff has happened between now and then.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I teased this a little bit last time. I want to kind of consolidate me talking about the book to like one episode. I don't want it to be like all I'm talking about. So here's kind of what I wanted to do. I wanted to just get on record my like hopes about this book and like what I'm thinking about with it.
You do
Kind of
realize
how,
after
yeah.
you saying that, and if I give you this platform for that, then you are no longer allowed to talk about it.
Unless somebody has questions about it. What?
Get it all out now.
Yeah, we're doing this is a different podcast, Betty. Cuz we're going to be gone. That was Betty reminding me of how late it was at night.
You're giving away the game, Paul.
I don't understand what you mean, Ben. So anyway, and I do understand that. And this is part of the reason why I'm doing it is I don't want to talk about it all the time.
Okay.
And so one of the, I guess the first thing that I'll mention is we could just talk about in general the concept of death of the author, right?
Death of the author.
Yeah, it's like a 20th century concept. The idea is basically, once you've written something and it's out there in the world, you can tell people, you know, what you intended or whatever, but that doesn't mean that that's all there is to it, you know? You might have had some sort of, like, symbolism in your work that you didn't realize that somebody else notices, and that doesn't mean that it's not in there. Just because you didn't intend this to be here doesn't mean that...
You can't really control how people interpret things.
So the big thing is that my book is really confusing.
On purpose, I must...
kind of by design, yeah. The basic thing is... I'm trying not to do spoilers, but... but I really need this to be understood. I spent about 4 years on it.
Okay.
Right or wrong, I made the decision to make it a complicated book that someone may have to take more than one stab at. That... It's not like a Finnegan's Wake kind of thing where the language is so confusing that you don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
But just basically, I didn't necessarily go and explain every single thing that's going on. There's stuff, and part of the reason for that is that, I mean, we are in a different age now where you can kind of look stuff up if you don't know what something is. But I like to think that I gave enough clues in the book that if you don't know what something is, you can kind of figure it out. That's the concept anyway.
You don't need to have the internet next to you when you're reading this book.
Right. It might help in sometimes, but I really tried to make it accessible for the people who look into it. And like I said, I kept the language simple. But that was what the main thing. I was like, not a lot of people are going to like this. That's one of the reasons why it's self-published. I will say that I did try. I did give a version of it to my agent. And he basically said that his thing was, like, in chapter one, right? There was enough stuff happening in chapter one that it could have been a whole book unto itself.
That's what your agent said.
A little bit more, yeah, okay. Exactly, and so he really encouraged me to try to make it more, sellable,
accessible.
Yeah, accessible maybe. Yeah, the big thing is that I really need to be careful here because. He wasn't saying that, you know, if I were able to pull off what I wanted to do in a format that was more commercial, he would have been more than happy to try it. But he found, I mean, and this is the other thing, is he's an editor besides being an agent. He was an editor for a long time. He found issues with it that would be pitfalls if I tried to sell it to places. You know, it's not that it's unreadable or anything like that. It's just that it's not something that... And I don't think he was being, like, overly kind to me or anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, that he was like, look, I, you know... And, you know, he tried to sell some other children's books that I did. But really, honestly, besides Giraffe and Elephant, the things I produce aren't necessarily mass appeal stuff.
Let me ask you this. Finish your thought first, and then I'll ask you a question.
Well, I was going to say, because of that, I'm often hesitant to share it with people.
Gotcha.
And the example that I gave is, it's like if I tell you about this really cool TV show, and then you watch it, and you're like, I didn't really like it. Are you sure you know who I am and what I like? Because you seem like you recommended this thing that's dumb to me.
Yeah.
It's like that, except I'm saying that to you about a thing that I actually wrote.
Right.
And so it's a little bit, you know,
concerned. You kind of have to get over that fear I feel that I mean, they say as an actor, you need to really be accustomed to rejection because you will be rejected a lot. And they say, like, you go to, you get maybe one out of every 30 or 40 auditions you go to.
Wow. That seems like, so one out of 30 or 40 seems like a good actor.
That does seem pretty good. I don't even think I've auditioned 30 times in my life, so who knows. But but they say that, you know, as a writer, it feels like I've never submitted anything I've written, so it feels, but all the writers that I know have to be used to rejection because the anecdotes that I've heard is that you are rejected constantly.
Yeah.
And so it's something that you have to be accustomed to and you have to accept. And it's not a judgment of the work. It's not saying this is a bad piece of literature.
Yeah. There's an actor that I follow on Twitter. His name's Anthony DeVito. He's great, right? And all the time he's talking about how difficult it is to book anything or land anything. And every time that I read that, I keep thinking about all the times where, we talked about this before with Mike Doughty, how he's having trouble.
Right.
And he's great as a musician. You know, that kind of thing. So I'm not, I didn't write this for it to be a moneymaker for me. That's the big thing. I wrote it to be a collection of stuff that I like.
Yeah.
And also to be sort of the cornerstone, something I can expand on later if I want to. You know, that sort of thing.
So the question I was going to ask earlier is, and this is actually for people listening who want to get into writing, I don't know if I've actually known this. How did you get an agent?
Oh, okay. And you're going to hear this from everyone because everyone that I've talked to has a different story. Yeah. The thing that I did to get an agent, I got an agent as an author illustrator. And the way that that happened was he saw a giraffe and elephant, in my Giraffes and Elephants Are Friends comics online. Through Facebook, actually. and with all the issues that are going on with Facebook, I know that that's a thing. But he actually, he contacted me through Facebook. He asked if I had an agent already and if I would be interested in trying to sell a book.
So he found you. You didn't, like, go searching for a literary agent.
Nope.
He found you.
I had been searching for literary agents before, and they were all right.
Yeah.
But basically, he was a friend of someone who I had worked with, an editor that I had worked with, trying to get a children's book put together. And in that case, when I was working with that other editor, it took too long for me. I wasn't used to waiting so long for it to be done.
Right.
And I was sort of like, I can't do this anymore. But they were still very kind and set me up with somebody who was publishing. Oh, that's the other thing. Who was interested in trying to publish the Giraffe and Elephant books. And this is the other thing. The Giraffe and Elephant book that I first tried to sell was a collection of the strips that I had put online.
Right.
And nobody wanted to buy it. And this is the other reason why my agent is such a good agent. Nobody wanted to buy it, and they kept on saying, maybe if there were stories that they were involved in, we would like it, but we don't like this format. And then I was like, oh, well, I guess I won't sell anything. And he was like, no, listen to what they're saying. They're saying if there were stories, they might be interested. Write some stories with these characters in it. And
listen,
so that's,
listen
that's
up.
What I...
Create a single overarching story.
Yeah. Well, that's the basic thing that I have come to learn is that, and I'm not exactly sure how to say this nicely, but success, quote unquote, right?
Yeah.
Like by any stretch of the imagination, you know, I sold two books to Disney. That was successful as far as doing a children's book is.
That's more than a lot of people get to do.
It is not necessarily repeatable. Because I tried to sell other stuff. It didn't work. And that's the thing, is that I thought, oh, well, here, I've sold this book. I'm successful. But all of a sudden, I think the goalposts moved for me. And I was like, oh, well, now I have to be, you know, I have to have all these books do nothing but write books.
Yeah, but let me ask a hard question. Is that because Giraffe and Elephants didn't sell?
Well, that's the other thing, is that they really didn't sell as well as anybody thought they would.
Okay.
And what a different type of writer might say is that it wasn't promoted well enough.
Oh, they're blaming
or at all, you know, and they might use that as a thing. But here's the thing. People will promote stuff if they want to promote it.
Yeah.
And how do they want to promote it? You know, it needs to, you have to see a little bit of success in order for people to say, hey, this is something that we should spend our time and money on.
Yeah.
Right. And so I had sold both of the books. They did not do great. And they, like, one of them is out of print already because they don't want to print more.
Right. Well, I just remember being in Portland and being at Powell's Books, which is I don't know if it's a world famous bookstore, but it's certainly regionally famous bookstore. And
Powell's is definitely world famous.
I was looking for your book, and I asked the lady where, and this was the first one. This was
Elephant Met Giraffe.
When Elephant Met Giraffe. I couldn't remember if that was the first one or if Surprise was the first one. And
Surprise is the second one.
I asked the lady if they had it, and she said that they were all sold out. And
When was that?
This was, I'd have to look it up. I couldn't tell you. It was like shortly after it came out.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And
No, that's good though.
I took that to mean that it did really well, but I don't know how many copies they had to begin with.
Right, how many they had on hand, all that kind of thing. It's interesting. I get my royalty statements, and they are lower than I would have expected. That's what I would say. Not just would have expected, like, ooh, I thought I would sell more, but just from the amount of, you know, and I guess library sales probably don't count, and, you know, like if there's a giveaway for a school or, you know, whatever.
Do you get quarterly royalties for the books?
No, I think it's annual. Pretty sure.
It's annual, okay.
But basically, yeah, not a lot of sales. And so that was the other reason why self-publishing this made sense to me, because, and this is my mindset, right? Giraffe and Elephant, very, very acceptable, very universally cute, and the stories are nice and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And if that didn't sell well, I cannot imagine, you know, in the, there are so many books, right? So many science fiction-y kind of things, so many fantasy types of things out there. I wanted to write something that people could find and enjoy, not something that everybody reads and half the people like it and half the people don't. I wanted just to, you know, let it be its own thing. So, you know, no, like when I wrote Love in a Time of Zombies, I had Facebook ads for it.
Oh, I didn't,
you know,
know,
and
part.
I got a lot more readers than I probably would have otherwise. But in the same way, I got a lot of people reading it who didn't care for it. And I don't, this is a thing that Jennifer and Betty, both my wife and my daughter, have explained to me, that you can't, control what people think about it.
Yeah.
Which is true. But in the same way, I mean, you can, if you could control your audience a little bit, right? Make sure the people that you think would like something would read it. Then I think that, maybe I feel like I have too much control over it, but it just seems to me like, Mystery Science Theater 3000, right?
Yeah.
Imagine if you show that to a whole bunch of people who hate movies and think that robots are dumb and don't like jokes, they're not going to like it. I don't know. I mean, it found its audience. It found the people that really like it. And the people that... Yeah, go ahead.
No. Continue your thought.
I was going to say the people that hate it don't even think about it.
Right.
Really. That's what I would say.
I think I've gotten to the point where I'm just kind of jaded, because early on in my video editing career, and I'd hate to call it a career, but it's kind of what it's become, I did this thing where, like, I produce a promo video for a piece of theater, and somebody that I respect, posted on a social media platform, "Don't watch this because it doesn't do the play any favors."
And wow.
I was really hurt by that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, you know what? That's just one person's opinion. I happen to like what we did. And ever since then, I thought to myself, I should, you know, just try not to take every person's single negative opinion too much to heart.
Well, I mean, the thing, I guess, and this might be the difference between you and me, because I like this, right? And this is why I'm really, really nervous about it. Because I like this, if somebody doesn't like it,
yeah,
and would post something like, "Hey, don't read this," because it would change not my opinion of what I did, but my opinion of that person.
Right.
And I don't like not liking people. I like liking people.
I know. I just got through, like, we closed Bury Me Under I-5, the latest Sergeant Grisby show, a few weeks ago at Theater Off Jackson. The one review we got was from The Stranger. And the reviewer from The Stranger said, basically, "Don't go to this. It's boring. I left at intermission." He hated it.
Wow. Now
that's,
was this person,
is this person
someone
who?
That we know?
No. Well, I don't think you know him. Well, I'm gonna name him because screw him. His name is Rich Smith.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so yeah, The Stranger is really, like, print journalism is really, it's a really hard business model to maintain these days.
Yeah.
And so we think that the reviews that come out of The Stranger are basically the editorial board saying, just try to write something that'll get clicks. And this review got clicks because people in the theater world were like, "How dare you write a scathing review if you left it in remission?"
Yeah, and it's Scott Ogdeson.
I know he's a Seattle treasure, and the theater community rallied around him. Like, Brett Fetzer posted this review on Facebook, and the comment section was just great because it was basically the theater community coming together. And I would have hoped that translated into ticket sales. It didn't really. However, now my point being, I had a meeting with someone that I'm working with today.
Yeah.
And she said that the show that we did, Bury Me Under I-5, she saw three things that month. Bury Me Under I-5, Black Panther, and Hamilton. And Bury Me Under I-5 was her favorite thing that she saw. And this is this is the person who, if she didn't like it, she would tell me.
That is great.
And so I so it's just another illustration of you cannot take one person's negative review as gospel. Because for, you know, people will like your art.
Now I do have a really quick question. The person who said, "Hey, don't watch this, it doesn't do the play justice."
Yeah.
For the thing that, were they involved with the play?
No.
Or were they a okay. That's actually better in my opinion. Because otherwise, WTF, buddy.
Well they are, and I'll gender them because WTF. He is a person that I in the film community that I respect. And so I'm like, is it because I did a bad job with the compositing? What's your game here? Why don't you like it? And I think it's I think it's just because the script of the promo video that we made didn't do justice to the play. And I had no control over the script. So once I rationalize that, I'm like, oh, he has a problem with the storytelling, which was, you know, the script was written by the guy who wrote the play. So I'm like, all right, well, then that's fine.
but still, yeah. One of the things that that I mentioned on Twitter. Oh, what I was gonna say, death of the author thing. Right. So I'm planning on not talking about it to anyone. That's why that's the other reason why I'm doing this. I might refer people to this later on. Because it's complicated and there are things in there. There are going to be some questions that people ask me that maybe I don't want to answer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that it's not because I hope they understand it's not because I don't have the answers. It's that I don't want to answer them. So what I did was I set up a separate Twitter account for the Long City Brotherhood of Magical Practitioners, which is one of the organizations in the book.
Yeah.
And if people have questions about the book, they can just ask them.
Is that Twitter handle in the book?
Answer. No, it's not. But it's in my Twitter bio. Cause yeah. No. I don't like putting website URLs or Twitter handles or anything in the books themselves.
Right, because those things change.
Because and it'll look dated and weird. Although speaking of dated and weird, the Arcane Secrets comics are in there. Which you and I have talked about at least a little bit.
A little bit.
And it fit pretty well. Looks all right. I wasn't sure how they would look in the book, but I think they look fine.
I think it's okay not answering questions if people ask questions. Yeah. That was illustrated to me when John Kaufman led a talk back for a play.
Uh-huh.
And this was years ago. And he basically said, you can ask questions. You can bring them up. We are not going to answer them. We are just going to take those questions and think about this place some more. We are not going to give you answers, and that is okay.
I do like that. I do like that a lot. That's a really smart way to do it.
Because then and your creative team just goes on the defensive when you have to rationalize or answer anything that the audience gives you.
Well, and there are people that I follow on Twitter who are writers, capital W writers. They talk about writing and then they you know, they have a lot of stuff that they've written and all that. And I'm not like a big fan of that lifestyle, I guess, because as we've said before, I hate writing. I hate doing it. I love it when something's over.
Right.
Can't stand it while I'm doing it, that sort of thing. But I've also seen them like be very, oh, well, hey, I have some notes or I have some tips or, hey, you know, and that's the friendliest. You know, they're also like, they will just unbidden find somebody's, and you and I both know someone who's done things like this, find a piece of writing that somebody's done and just critique it.
Right.
Like, break it down and say, this is why this sucks, because of this, 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 and this.
Right.
And I hate it. I hate that kind of thing so much. But I follow people and I'm friends with people who can do that sort of thing and not feel bad about it, which I don't get. But that's the other thing that I'm a little bit afraid of, is that the fact that I have written this will be taken as an invitation to write about why it's not good in a helpful sort of way, quote unquote. And I don't like that either.
Well, so, I mean,
but again, this is, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. That's all that I can, that I'm going to say to you is, if somebody does get their hands on it and writes a critique on it, that doesn't mean necessarily they're right.
Right. It doesn't mean I have to read it either.
Exactly.
That's the other big thing. Because, yeah, I mean, I wrote it. I like it. And well, that's pretty much...
With that being said, I'm going to upload my dissertation on how it's a terrible book and you should be ashamed of yourself.
Oh, Ben, no, don't do it. No. And it's not a terrible book either. It's a good book. That's what I like about it. But one of the things I was going to say is that Jennifer reminded me of something and I made a grave misstep. There is a longstanding tradition, that if you ever put anything out there that you mention Annex Theater in like the acknowledgements or things like that. And I did not do that.
Well, in your defense, I didn't know that was a thing either.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that in the book itself, there's a place, a theater that's in there called the Attic Theater, which is a sly little nudge and a wink, perhaps, to a theater that we both know. But the other thing is that I realized that I thanked K. Brian Neal.
Yeah.
For reading it. But I did not thank either Bronte or Rowan for reading it, which, you know, was a error on my part, because I remember, see, what I was doing is I was looking at people that I had sent earlier drafts to.
Mm-hmm.
Casey Saint-Ange is another one. Who wrote Worst Vampire Ever. Which is good. And Casey, I know you're probably not listening to this, but if you are and I got the name of that book wrong, I apologize. Because we're still keeping it wrong here.
Is it Casey or Cassie?
I'm not looking things up. Casey. It's got to be Casey. I've heard her say it out loud once.
Okay.
Casey. Yeah, it's because it's C-A-I-S-S-I-E.
Mm.
Casey. But the basic thing is, so I forgot some people, but the one other thing that I realized is that as I was writing it, I was thinking about Seattle people.
Yeah.
When I was thinking about the roles and stuff like that. So like, and then also I double cast just in case somebody had a prior commitment and things like that. So in my head, like I'm not going to, again, this is one of those things, I'm not going to share it right now, but I have, like, in my head, if it were to be, instead of a novel, a play,
Yeah.
Like, who I would have cast in which roles and stuff like that. And it's kind of interesting. I didn't do it on purpose. They just sort of, the people formed in my head, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I can see that. You put people that you know, be they friends or acquaintances or movie stars, into roles that you write.
Yep. And I think it helps them be more... I don't know if I've talked to you about this before, but I read really fast.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I've done that actually makes me slow down a little bit, but makes me enjoy the thing I'm reading a little bit more, is if I cast the main characters.
Yeah.
In my head with actual people. And then I can visualize what's happening in the scene better. And the thing that's interesting is that when the thing that I cast somebody in, if the character changes at some point in time, it makes me go, wow, that actor has more range than I thought, because I'm imagining them doing more things than they normally do, which is pretty cool.
And you hear the dialogue in their voice and et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a book I'm reading right now called The Gone Away World by Harkaway. First name, I can't remember. I think it's Nick Harkaway. Steven and I just talked about this book recently. Steven McCandless and I. And it just so happens that I was listening to the old Rube, as they say, Bob Rubin, a comedian.
Mm.
And in Perfect Storm, Bob Rubin's voice became the voice of the book that I'm reading, and it fits really, really well. So it's almost like listening to a book on tape now instead of, you know, an actual reading experience, which is good. I'm also glad that I haven't talked about my book this entire time and talked about other things, because I don't think it would work that well.
So we're about at that point where we're halfway through. This is going to be a special half episode.
Yep, that's right. And in fact, we're actually already. Yeah,
we're more than halfway through. We're at 37 minutes.
Probably a good time. But yeah, the name of the book is Mara and the Magicians. You could get it on Amazon. And probably other places.
And how do you spell Mara?
Create space. Mara is MARAH.
There you go.
And her name is a portmanteau between Sarah and Malik. So you just take the M and put it there. She's the daughter of a guy named Malik and a woman named Sarah. And how all that turns out is part of what the book is about.
All right. So since we're wrapping up, it's time for me to drop some surprise on you.
Oh, I'm excited to hear what this is.
I'm sure you've been excited. Well, anyway. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Ben.
Blair and I are going to take a road trip in September.
Hey!
And guess what city is on the itinerary?
St. Louis.
That's right. We're going to come to St. Louis.
Oh, that is awesome.
All right. Here's what's going to happen.
September?
In September.
Uh-huh. Yes.
All right. We're planning this big road trip. We're going to stop in Walla Walla. We're going to drive through South Dakota. We're going to stop in St. Louis, and we're going to go to New Orleans, and then over to Houston, Austin, Oklahoma, San Francisco. It's going to be a big 3-week trip.
Nice.
I've already rented the car. One of the reasons why I put St. Louis on the itinerary is not just because I want to see my old friend Paul Goody, but because I still have stuff of yours that I want to give back to you.
Oh, hey, awesome. That's
I have
that's great.
About 100 pounds of sketchbooks and an accordion, and I think I might still have a guitar of yours. There's a guitar
you
in the office.
That accordion?
And that accordion.
Oh, that's great.
So,
That's great.
So here's what's going to happen. We're going to roll into St. Louis on Friday, the 14th of September.
Friday the 14th, can't do it, sorry.
And
I'm kidding.
And then we're going to go see the Cardinals play the Dodgers on Saturday, and it's a day game.
Oh.
So at Saturday night on September 15th, keep that open.
I will. Now, you're coming from where again? Which direction?
We're going to be driving from that morning we're going to be in Sioux City, Iowa.
Okay. Now, so, I'm throwing this out there. And where are you going from St. Louis? Where are you going?
From St. Louis or driving to New Orleans?
Yeah, see, you may want to, I'm just throwing this out here, I mean, you've got a lot of time to plan, you may want to stop through on your way, because you're going to be going backwards to go to Illinois from St. Louis.
Well, yeah, see, what's going to happen is we're going to get a hotel in St. Louis, and then we'll come out and visit you in Edwardsville.
And then you're going to go back to your hotel.
And then go back to the hotel in St. Louis.
Ah, okay. Yeah. This all works out great.
And then drive down to New Orleans.
Well, that is awesome. So, I'm glad to hear it.
So
that is
pencil in those dates.
Okay. I'm going to go to my calendar right now. Let's see here. All right, I am putting this down. Is it September?
We're going to arrive on Friday the 14th, and on Saturday the 15th, we're going to be in St. Louis until about 3 or 4, and then after that, we'll take you guys out for dinner or something.
Oh, awesome.
Or, I mean, we can record a podcast, a live podcast.
We could September 15th. That is a Saturday.
That is a Saturday.
All right, and I'm just gonna put around 5 p.m. Did you say
something like that? Yeah.
Okay, 5 p.m. All right, I'll just add it here. Ben is here.
Yeah.
All right, Ben, that is great. I can't wait. This will be the first time we've seen each other in a really long time. It'll be just like when that lion meets that dude. And it's like, I remember you.
Exactly. It'll be like that.
Yes. Ben, I can't wait. This is great news. I'm really happy.
Cool.
To hear it. And yeah. Oh, hey. You are going to be traveling during Rosh Hashanah, maybe. Oh no, that's a wait. No, that's the 10th and the 11th.
We're actually leaving on the 10th.
Okay, well, yeah, that's Rosh Hashanah then.
Yeah,
interesting that I have that on my calendar.
Will you be observing?
So, I probably won't be. Here's the thing that Gosh, who called this? I think it was Ben that called this. There's a lot of stuff that I like, but I also spent, 43 years not doing any of it.
Right.
And so the not doing any of it is still very deep in me. And therefore, I like having there being a Goody Pratt way of doing things, not a me separate from them doing things sort of thing.
That keeps the family harmony in check.
Exactly. That's right. I don't like it being my stuff.
Yeah.
And their stuff. I mean, not to say, Ben, should you ever be in a position where this sort of thing is an issue, you can have your own things. I don't mean to say that that's bad. It's just that you shouldn't necessarily pursue things that will exclude the other people.
Right.
So, that is my advice. Also, again, Mara the Magicians is the name of the book. We have talked about it on this podcast for this episode, and we'll only do it again if questions come up. And if the questions come up, Ben, I hope you will groan and roll your eyes as you might. Yes, exactly. That's
just like that.
That is how it should be, because this is about you and me and our friendship. That's what it's a podcast about, friends, really.
A podcast about friendship.
Not a podcast about friends, though. I'm sure there are already tons of those. It's a podcast about friendship.
Exactly.
And Ben, thank you so much for talking to me.
Yep.
For today.
Yeah.
And look, we're only really 15 minutes shy of doing a full episode.
It's a bargain so, at twice the price.
Thanks to everybody who listened.
Yeah.
And until then, keep it wrong.
Keep it wrong.
Thanks, Ben.
Have fun all in right. Florida.
Oh yeah. It's gonna be great. I'll tell you all about it.
Can't wait to hear. All
then
right.
I'm good.
I'll talk to you later.
Hang this up somehow. All right. Talk to you later, Ben.
Yep.